And you're welcome back to the programme. The time now is 14 minutes to 5. Well, it was in 1962 that President John F. Kennedy pledged to put a man on the moon before that decade was through. Now, NASA has said humans will be living and working there within the next 10 years, an ambition that seemed much closer to reality last week after India became the first country to successfully land a craft near the moon's south pole. I'm joined on the line now by one of our regular contributors, David Moore, Chairman of Astronomy Ireland. David, good afternoon to you, and you're very welcome to the programme.
Good afternoon.
David, certainly this Indian mission moves into uncharted territory as the rover begins its exploration, but how significant were these developments last week?
Well, it's twofold. It's one that India has joined the moon landing club. Previously only had China, Russia and the Americans in it. And as well as that, this is another step on the exploration of the moon, which is a stepping stone to Mars. And by landing on the South Pole, the reason they chose that is that that's where we can put the first moon bases most easily. Because we think the craters, the deep craters at the South Pole of the moon, have never had the sunlight shine into the floor of the crater. So water has pooled there over probably millions, if not billions of years. Other craft have detected the signature of water in these shadow filled craters, and now India has actually landed there to do an actual on-site analysis. So they're contributing enormously to the joint international effort to get the first moon base. And they've also proved that they can do this. Landing on the moon is not easy. It's about 1,000 times further to the moon than it is to get a satellite up orbiting the Earth. So they've done lots of satellites on the Earth. Most giant countries have an active space program because you need satellites to run civilization these days. We couldn't cater for 8 billion people on the planet without very advanced for shipping goods and foodstuffs around the planet and making sure, you know, the supermarket shelves are all well stocked. If all the satellites were wiped out, chaos would ensue within a few days. So India's played its part. And one of the most remarkable things is the cost, $75 million. You can barely get a Western satellite up into space for that kind of money. They've gone to the moon and landed on the moon even more. So the cost effectiveness is astounding as well.
David, two specific sites often mentioned are Mount Malapert, which is near the South Pole, and then the rim of the Peary Crater near the north. How are the experts going to decide where precisely the point of location will be?
The first landings we expect will be the Americans, who are going back with Artemis 3. They've already launched Artemis 1, that entire system, giant rocket, habitable craft that people can go in, has orbited them last year and come back safely. It works, which is a big relief. Next is to put a crew into it and make sure they actually survive going around the moon. Don't land, just come back and make sure everything's safe. And the third mission, Artemis 3, which will be about 2 or 3 years' time, will land people on the moon. NASA said it's going to put the first woman on the moon and the first person of color on the moon because, of course, it's different back in the 60s and 70s when they last had astronauts, and all 12 men that stood on the moon's surface were white males. So they want to redress a particular issue. So the first site will be the safest one. After that, you start thinking about sending more crews up and then building bases. So Lunar Gateway, which is an orbiter, acts as a staging post to get to the moon and then go down to the moon base. That's under construction at the moment. So things, a lot of things are going to happen this decade. And if things go well, the next decade or the decade after that, you can expect the moon to be used as a stepping stone out to Mars, which is the ultimate prize.
And David, having chosen the location, then accommodation, I presume, becomes very relevant indeed. How is that going to be done? I mean, I'm just trying to imagine the type of accommodation that would be there once people actually live and work on the moon.
Yeah, well, the conditions on the moon are very extreme compared to the Earth, even though it's the same distance to the sun as we are. We're lucky with our atmosphere. It does lots of things for us, apart from providing oxygen for us to breathe. It regulates the temperature. So if the Earth had no atmosphere, it would be like the moon in that wherever the sun isn't shining, drops to minus 100 degrees Celsius, and wherever the sun is shining, it goes up to plus 100 degrees Celsius. So if you're an astronaut standing in, say, the shadow of a rock, and your left leg's in the shadow, your right leg's in the sun, one of your legs at plus 100 degrees Celsius, boiling water, and the other leg is at minus 100 degrees Celsius. It's colder than the Antarctic ever been on Earth. So you need a very good spacesuit to move coolants around to keep you from frying and freezing at the time. So probably the best, method is to, it turns out the surface of the moon is full of this sort of dust, lunar regolith. It's probably because the rocks have been pummeled by things from space over billions of years. So you could easily bulldoze that, shall we say, move it, into habitat that you don't have to dig a hole. You could just basically build a structure, cover it with lunar regolith, and you're protected from those crazy temperature changes. You can heat it inside as well, and you're protected from the deadly radiation that hits the moon's surface. When they went to the moon, they had to be very careful there were no major explosions on the sun, because that could send extra radiation that could have seriously injured, if not killed, the astronauts. So it's a very inhospitable place to go to the moon is.
And we've talked about location, South Pole probably being the better location. We've discussed accommodation. Like any Earth city, I presume, settlements would need supplies of energy and food. So where would they be found?
Well, this is the great thing. There's lots of sunlight on the moon, because no, it's never cloudy. So as long as the sun is shining above the horizon, the South Pole, there are places where it will shine almost non-stop. And so you've got all the electricity you need if you bring enough solar panels. And you can take the water and not only drink it, so the humans are happy that way, but also you can then electrolyze it and produce hydrogen and oxygen. That's what water is. And hydrogen and oxygen, that's rocket fuel. So you actually have all the fuel you need, as I say, close to Mars, I go back to the Earth, and you have water to feed humans. You're left needing food, and then there are things like hydroponics, where we think we can probably regenerate all the food over longer term. I'm sure in the short term it's ferried up from the Earth to the moon, which is very expensive. I know to get a kilogram of material from the ground up to the International Space Station, which is pretty close to the Earth, costs $10,000. So, you know, you don't want to be ferrying too much to the moon. So you don't want to ferry anything. You don't have to. So anything you can do using the local resources is going to dramatically reduce the cost.
In terms of the mechanics of it, David, the project may sound like a Hollywood plotline, but there are six space agencies involved here with lunar ambitions: NASA, the European Space Agency, Russia, which had bad news the other day in relation to the moon and crash landing, the European Space Agency, as I say, Russia, China, Japan and India, and of course billionaires such as Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos. How are they all going to be accommodated?
Well, it's a good question. The politics is interesting, to say the least. We have some precedent for this in the Antarctic, where I think the UN treaty has said that it basically belongs to all countries, and it's really only to be used for scientific exploration. So no oil companies, no tourists. It's a pretty inhospitable place anyway, and it is best used for research. So if we could do something similar with the moon, and there are discussions being held about this, then it'll be okay. But in the short term, it is a very big place, and it will be hard for a few small crews to make a serious mess of these plans before it becomes an issue. So probably the politics will follow later. This is what tends to happen. I mean, look at the colonization of the Wild West of the United States. The settlers went first, and the Federation of States came much later. So what will probably happen is that what is happening is that the individuals, Jeff Bezos, Blue Origins, and Elon Musk's SpaceX, they've already got contracts from NASA to do these landings. In fact, we just had a crew launch the International Space Station yesterday, and they were docked yesterday, and they were paid. NASA paid SpaceX to do that for them, and they have multi-billion-dollar contracts already signed and sealed. The spacecraft are being built. So the private industry is already doing it. Now, After that, if they want with their own money to build their own lunar space stations, spacecraft, Mars craft, etc., there is nothing to stop them at the moment. So the future is, I won't say uncertain, very exciting. There's a lot of players, as you said, in the race to get to the moon and indeed further on to Mars. And there's lots of other companies doing it. Bigelow Aerospace is looking at putting giant inflatable blow-up hotels in space. The space tourism business just taken off with Richard Branson's Virgin Galactic launching its first paid customers. There's five Irish people have paid him to go up into space, and one of those could be going up in the next few months. So there's a lot happening in space all the time. That's what we love covering in the pages of Astronomy Ireland magazine every month, especially as an Irish angle.
The people who will go there, I mean, every person there, I presume, will have to deal with the huge physical and psychological consequences of living in 1/6 gravity and 400,000 kilometres from Earth. And is it the case that most of these effects are as yet unknown, and that for many it will be a learning exercise, kind of learn as you go along?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I mean, we do have precedent in that 12 that have walked on the surface of the moon. There's never been any moon base there. But we have put sort of, I won't say moon base or Mars bases on the Earth, but there have been underwater habitats set up to mimic what it would be like to live in isolation, to live cut off from outside sources. Even Irish people have been involved in this. People like Dr. Niamh Shaw have spent time in one of these Mars habitats trying to simulate what it's like to try and have to do everything on your own, cut off from all of our modern civilizations. So people are practicing on the Earth. They've got a pretty good idea what it's like on the moon because we've been there, and we can pretty much estimate what Mars is like. We have rovers on the surface there as we speak. So I don't think the engineering is beyond it. It's just very difficult and really quite expensive at the moment. But like everything else, once it's being mass-produced, the cost will drop dramatically, and that's what's expected to happen. Jeff Bezos and Elon Musk stood on stage in public a few years ago and said that they are going to put 1 million people on Mars by the end of this century. Now, if crackpots or dreamers had said that, we'd all just laugh at it. But these are the world's two richest men, and they both own cutting-edge space companies. So they're literally putting their money where their mouth is. If they say it, they've thought about it in great detail, and that is their goal and dream, and they are working towards it hell for leather. Bezos has given up his involvement with Amazon, .com. Elon Musk is powering ahead with this 100-seater Mars, basically bus, take 100 people at a time. I mean, we've only got, I think, it's 14 people in space at the moment. The record is, I think, 16, and he's talking about 100 people going to Mars, and he's building that craft. He has nuts and bolts on the ground. He even part-launched it as well. So these people are very serious.
And just in terms of those people who will find themselves living on the moon, working on the moon, will their task be essentially to map out the next stage in terms of making it to Mars? Will that be their function of being there?
Definitely. These people will be pathfinders, especially ones that start to build, live in the first moon base, because you know, we've done the same thing with the International Space Station. The scientists up there, astronauts up there, are doing three jobs. They're basically lab rats, as in we're looking at what happens to the human body in weightlessness over 6 months to a year. We don't know, so we're finding out what can we do about it. They're running experiments, it's a big laboratory in space, for the scientists down on the ground. And they're caretakers. They have to go out in spacewalks and assemble bits of the space station and replace other bits as they're ferried up to them. So this, and the same will go for the first moon base operators. It'll be a full-time job. You'll be building the moon base. They'll be monitoring what's happening to your body while you're doing it. And there'll probably be some experiments going on for the science in the background as well. I mean, there's plans to do all kinds of things. Giant radio telescopes on the far side of the moon where the radio waves from CRC FM won't interfere with detecting signals from deep space. And to be fair, all the other radio stations on the planet. So there are just huge plans. Money, time, and energy is the problem. But human ingenuity and vision for the future is not a problem at all.
Just a final thought, David. You know, you mentioned earlier those involved in this exploration, Russia, China, Japan, India, the United States, of course, the European Space Agency. Is there a possibility that a desire to dominate the moon, colonize the moon, could in fact give rise to global friction down here between those various interested groups or countries?
I mean, it's difficult to say because that's very far in the future. Moon bases and early colonists are going to be in the single digits. There's 8 billion people on the planet. The moon is a pretty big place. It's roughly the size of a continental United States. There's plenty of room for everybody at the beginning. But maybe in a century's time, let's say, that's a complete guess, we might be looking at the problem on the Earth. 8 billion people, going up to 10 billion, it's estimated, by about 2050. And that's about all we can support with the amount of resources that the Earth has. Can't really get more than 10 billion people. Then maybe it'll become an issue when we say, well, the next place to go and colonize is the moon. Ridiculously expensive at the moment. No country could possibly afford to put down serious numbers of people on the moon. So it's not going to be a short-term problem. But when, as the rockets are being mass-produced, you've got a rocket that works, it's efficient. Making one's going to be expensive, but make 1,000 of them is much cheaper. It just will ultimately come down to the cost of materials. Then, as the colonies build up, that's when groups like the UN are going to come in and there's going to be call for treaties because the Americans can land on top of the Chinese and vice versa, and none of them want that happening to each other. And it's unlikely to be a military expedition. If anything, it might be a bit of a land grab, but that's about it. And we managed to solve those problems with the Antarctic during the Cold War, so I don't see it being a problem in the future, but you never know.
Well, it certainly is fascinating. Any word before we finish in relation to Astronomy Ireland?
Yeah, there's a big event coming up on Saturday week. We have our annual star party, Starbecue, Ireland's answer, or the astronomer's answer to electric picnic, if you like. And we're going to set up giant telescopes to show people the planet Saturn in particular with its rings and moons live. Jupiter will be there as well. The wonders of the universe, a barbecue, talks, trade stands, exhibitions. It's a great festival of astronomy, one day only a year. It's the 9th of the 9th, September the 9th this year. We're inviting everybody in the country to come along, have a burger under the stars, and blow your mind with the views through some giant telescopes in a really dark sky in the Wicklow Mountains. All the details are on astronomy.ie, our website, where you can also get Astronomy Ireland magazine. It costs you about €1 a week. If you're interested in space, you should be getting it. We talk about a lot more things than what you and I have just been talking about today. And we obviously all love astronomy and space exploration.
Very good. We leave it there. David Moore from Astronomy Ireland, as always, many thanks indeed for joining us on the programme this evening. 4 minutes past 5 is the time. We'll take a break.